What's going on, Bourne family? Welcome to another episode of Bourne to Talk, and tonight I'm joined by a young gentleman who is the current IPF world champion, soon to be Scottish, European and British champion, a man who knuckles down and works with a work ethic like none other I've seen. Like, his intensity is insane, but never complains, just cracks on, gets the job done, and obviously wins. This guy, absolutely incredible athlete, incredible coach. He's both reputations speak for themselves. We don't need to go into too much detail, but ladies and gentlemen, tonight I would like to introduce you to Mr. Mark McQueen. Mark, how are you, sir?
I'm very good, thanks very much for having me on.
Thank you for being on. I'm really excited for this one. It's been a long time coming, but I'm glad we finally get to get this thing rolling.
Yeah, we've been talking about it now for months. Since November last year, actually. Because after the British Championships last year, was the first time we spoke about it. So yes.
Oh, dude, that's crazy.
I know. That's insane. It's been a while, but you know, both busy. But it's good to finally be on.
Absolutely, yeah, dude. I'm excited. So, firstly, allow me to express my excitement to have you on the show today. Like, it's been crazy seeing you grow. Like, I've been watching your YouTube videos for a good few years now, so it's crazy to like see your growth. But I'm going to go into that in a little bit more detail in a bit. So before we get started, do you want to introduce yourself, tell people who you are, what you do, that kind of thing?
Of course, yes. So my name is Mark McQueen. I am from Glasgow, Scotland. And I am a self-employed strength coach, so I've got my own business where I coach athletes around the world. From Scotland all the way through to Australia and pretty much everywhere in between. And I am also a powerlifter, so that is the sport that I do. My notable achievements in powerlifting so far, I am the IPF Junior Under 120 Kilo World Champion, which is pretty surreal for me to say anyway. But yeah, I'm the junior world champion. I'm also the junior under 120 kilogram IPF European champion. And I'm a 2-time Scottish and 2-time British champion. Best lifts in competition are a 327.5 kilogram squat, which off the top of my head is 723 pounds.
Oh my God.
And that is also an IPF European record. European record in a squat. My best bench is 192.5 kilograms. Off the top of my head, pounds wise, I believe it's 426 pounds. And deadlift is the same as a squat, 327.5 kilos, which is 722 pounds. And my best total is 847.5 kilograms, which was done at the World Championships just past. And off the top of my head, again, 847.5 kilos and pounds for these American viewers is 1,870 pounds total.
Okay, and let's just finish this off. Mark, how old are you?
I'm 22 years old.
What the fuck? Just an absolute savage of a man. Like, absolute monster. That's insane. Like, a 700-pound plus squat. Deadly. I have no words for that. So,
they're also all unequipped as well. So they're all raw. Just in case we've got people that understand equipped lifting as well. So they're all unequipped lifts. But yeah, you know, it's funny. It's really, really funny because I don't personally when I tell people the lifts that I've made in successful competition, you know, people are, you know, always going about how massive they are, but I don't really perceive them to be that massive. I think probably because the attitude I have of myself is, you know, I don't walk around seeing myself as, you know, the IPF world champion. I just see myself as a totally regular, normal dude who just really, really enjoys lifting weights and, you know, has a passion for it and enjoys sharing it. So I always get quite surprised when people get taken aback by, you know, the achievements that I've done, because, you know, I suppose I just don't really see myself as that. I more embody myself as just, you know, a normal dude that just is just one of the pack that really, really enjoys lifting weights and just wants to get stronger, like everybody else. But I suppose I've been maybe fortunate enough to be able to take that to a level where, you know, I have achieved some relatively big things to date anyway.
at 22 years old as well, which is just going to mean even bigger things in the future. And like, I completely understand. And as I said, I've seen you grow over a few years through the internet, and you've always been super humble, always. And that's what I think so many people respect about you. You're just a super humble guy. And yet you are just like your everyday dude, just like everyone else, but just crazy strong. And it's mad because you see people that are just freakishly strong, like genetic wise, but for you, like, we've seen you work for this and it's insane. So watching you online for these years, I think I speak for everybody who has known you for a while, that has watched your videos or anything like that, that becoming IPF world champion was kind of a given. Like, we knew it was going to happen for you. So tell us, how did it feel to be crowned IPF world champion, like standing on that podium, first place, medal around your neck? Tell us what you felt in that moment.
Total surrealness. So I've thought about this a lot, and you know, I started lifting weights when I was 16 and a half years old, and so that was way back in 2011. Yes, so I have been, you know, and ever since I started lifting weights, I've always been really, really, really obsessed with strength and getting bigger and stronger. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just being very, very strong is something that always I really enjoyed. I first stepped on the platform when I just turned 18 years old. But ever since I was 17, I wanted to be a powerlifter. That's what I wanted to do. And ever since 17, I wanted to be a world champion powerlifter. Which is really funny, because, you know, most people get into a sport and they you know, maybe get into sport because they want to enjoy it, or they have some, you know, some minor goals. But my goal ever since getting into the sport 17, right from when, you know, I couldn't even squat 180 kilograms, was I want to be a world champion. Mm. Which I look back and find quite funny, because, you know, the total belief that I had back then, you know, wasn't justified, because, you know, someone who couldn't even squat 180 kilos saying want to be one day be a world champion, you know, it takes a lot of, I suppose, delusional self-belief. But ever since I was 17, I've wanted to be a world champion, and I pretty much every day since I first stepped on the platform at 18, I've dreamt about being an IPF world champion. And there's pretty much hasn't been a single day in my life that's gone by that I haven't done it. So you expect that when you then get on the podium after spending so many years dreaming about that situation, you're going to be quote-unquote ready for it. Mm. If that makes sense. But when it was all said and done, and, you know, back in June a couple of months ago, I was standing on the podium, you know, just crowned IPF world champion, and, you know, I'm standing in first place, and the national anthem was going, you just realise how unready you actually are for the situation. which I found very, very, very strange, because you've literally spent, you know, or I've spent my entire adult life now. I know I'm only 22 years old, but, you know, I only know up until now. So from 16 to now, you know, my whole adult life has been dreaming of a situation. And for that then to actually happen, you would expect to be somewhat ready to embrace it. But, you know, I wasn't. It just was total surrealness. You know, you're standing there and it just almost doesn't really feel real because of the magnitude of the situation, I suppose. It was a very, very happy moment. Probably, in my opinion, the happiest moment of my life, I would say. And in the back of my head, there really was a whole load of kind of I told you so thoughts. Mm. You know, so it was really, really, really cool experience, but a really surreal experience as well.
I can imagine, dude. I understand where you're coming from. Obviously, you know, I used to play basketball, so it was like I used to spend every single waking second dreaming of getting my first contract. So when I was offered my first contract, like, I was bouncing off the fucking walls. Like, I was going nuts. I knew it was coming.
Yeah.
It was crazy. So I understand what you're saying. So the reason I asked that question, it seems like a really obvious question to ask, is, but I had a feeling with you, because you're just constantly trying to push yourself even further, I was curious as to how that felt like, if you did have that feeling where you were like, well, I knew this was going to happen, or if it was like, holy shit, I've just become world champion. So You've just told us about how you felt then. How do you feel now, looking back at it? Is it still like that same kind of feeling, or has things started to sink in and you're just hungrier for what's coming next?
Yeah, you know, so again, you know, it still just doesn't feel real. You know, like, to me, I've watched so many people and followed so many people, and, you know, and I've followed many IPF world champions, and I've always somewhat, you know, put these people on some form of a pedestal, in the sense of, you know, this person is such a big deal, and this person, you know, is just such a freak of nature. The fact that he was able to win, you know, the pinnacle of his sport, which is powerlifting, you know, because, you know, the IPF is without a shadow of doubt the most competitive platform you can possibly stand on. Mm-hmm. And I've always looked up to those people, and I've always totally had a full embodiment of, I'm just a totally normal guy that isn't that good at powerlifting, that just wants to get really good at powerlifting. Mm. And no matter how good I've got, even up to this point, I still totally believe, and that's what I kind of see of myself. And I suppose it's more of a strategy to ensure that I don't get big-headed, I don't get too full of myself, and I stay humble, and I stay hungry to keep getting better. Mm. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So, but when I actually take a step back and think, you know, actually, you know, those people that you thought were just absolute phenoms, and, you know, the fact that they've done that is just absolutely unbelievable. But for me to then realise, you know, actually, I'm one of those people now. I actually did that. It still just doesn't really feel real. But then again, I always knew I was going to do it. So that's where it becomes slightly confusing.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. But yeah, it feels really, really good. But one thing that I was aware of, because I do try and kind of read quite a bit, and, you know, recently over the past year, I've been very, very kind of infatuated with sports psychology, mainly to try and help my own performances, you know, on the platform and in the gym.
Yeah.
And also, you know, try and help the athletes that I work with. You know, I would never ever, you know, claim to be an expert or even, you know, clued up in sports psychology whatsoever. You know, I'm still very ignorant to a lot of it, but, you know, I like to learn, and anything that I can learn, I like to maybe try and, I can maybe pass on to some of the athletes that I work with. Mm-hmm. You know, and help myself. And a very, very common thing with a lot of Olympians after the Olympics is they've spent their whole life leading up to this point, and they go to the Olympics and then they win, you know, their gold medal in the Olympics, and they've just won the pinnacle of the sport. You know, you physically can't get higher than that.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of people go into a lot of people refer to it as post-Olympic depression, where a lot of people fall into some bouts of depression because, you know, they've just literally experienced a euphoria that, you know, that maybe you would only ever experience once in your life. And they're like, you know, where do we go from here? How do we, you know, what do we do from now? We've done everything we want to do, you know, how are we going to go from here? And I was always interested as to whether, you know, I would feel that way after winning Worlds. But I would say there definitely has been some thoughts of, you know, like, bloody hell, you know, like, you know, where do we go from here? Or, you know, and some things like that. But honestly, you know, I think being really, really, I actually made a post about this not too long ago, you know, whenever in the pursuit of a dream or a goal or something of that magnitude that means the world to you, you've got to really fall in love with the process and the journey, because often the destination isn't going to evoke the feelings that we genuinely thought it was going to evoke. Or on the other side, there never actually is a destination because there's always something more to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
For sure, yeah. And I get that. Like, I think as an athlete, you kind of have to have that. Like, you can't be satisfied with what you've got. And like you were just saying, like, yeah, you can get to the top level, but it's never enough, is it? Like, no matter what you do as an athlete, it's never enough. Very rarely. I mean, obviously there's instances where athletes kind of, they might sign a contract or they might win something or whatever, and they become like complacent. You see it time to time, but I think as an athlete, you've got that competitive nature in you. So naturally you just always want to be better. And don't get me wrong, sometimes it can be unhealthy. Sometimes it can be really healthy, depending on how you are able to apply that into your life. Like obviously we've seen you be able to apply that. So you've gone from strength to strength, but there's people who they will let that bring them down. And that's obviously not the type of thing you want, but it's interesting talking about sports psychology. It's one of those things that always fascinates me. It's just hearing how you can take a bunch of different people. They've all got different approaches, the way they think, but they might all end up being like the top of their sport. And I think that's amazing that you can have so many different people that are so good at things. So with that in mind, how has your mindset changed? If it has, it might not have, but how has it changed from when you were first on the platform to becoming an elite level lifter, let's say? Like, what goes through your head now before a competition, and also what used to go through your head back then? Like, how does that differ?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I would say the main thing that's changed is the level of maturity and the way that I approach stuff. So when I first stepped on the platform, you know, it's new and it's exciting, and you know, you can quite easily make some immature decisions and some emotional decisions. And when approaching lifts themselves, you know, maybe fly off the handle a wee bit, you know, get a wee bit too hyped up, and you know, treat the lifts, make the lifts, put the lifts on a pedestal and make the lifts almost seem like a very big deal, and that you've got to, the only way to get those lifts is to absolutely lose your mind and go berserk and try and get lifts. Whereas now, you know, the way I approach everything is, you know, I've got a job to do, and this is the job to do, and I'm going to do my job. And that, you know, in the sense of like at World, you know, I had to make weight. So, you know, once you make weight, you then approach, you know, what have I got to do next? You know, so I've got to, you know, rehydrate. You know, I've got to get, you know, my water in me. I've got to get sodium in me. I've got to have X, Y, and Z in me. You know, and then when you're warming up, you know, you're just doing your job and staying calm. So now I would say I approach everything with as level ahead as possible, as calm ahead as possible, and I don't put anything on a pedestal, in the sense of I don't make any number. I don't have any emotional attachment to any number. I simply will put the number in the bar at what, for example, at Worlds, that needed to be in the bar in order for me to get the win. And that number can be whatever it needs to be. And I know that whatever number I need to be, I need to approach it with confidence, and I need to approach it with a clear and calm head. And I need to just, when under the bar, I need to, you know, shut my mind off. There's no time or room for thinking. You know, all that's done. I just need to trust in the hours and hours and hours and years and years and years of practice and building good habits with the movements. And you just execute, you know. And I see that as the biggest difference now, is not being emotional on competition day, not making emotional decisions, and being calm, level-headed, and just focus on the execution and following the task at hand and just doing your job. And I would say that's kind of the difference from now, whereas earlier on, you know, you would make emotional decisions, you'd be a bit irrational because of the emotions, you're not that calm, and you're not treating it like your job, you're treating it as something that is, you know, it's such a ridiculously big task that I'm about to do, and I've got to lose my mind to do that. And you know, by no stretch of the imagination am I meaning that I actually think that, you know, being on the powerlifting platform is my job. It's not, obviously, but treating it like my job allows for that mindset, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and I think that's key for just performing at your best in general. Is if you treat everything obviously, like, we all have to work, we have to pay the bills, stuff like that, but if you can treat your, like you were just saying, stepping on the platform as your job, like, that's the only thing that you are focusing on at that point in time. You go in, you get the work done, and you're good. Like, it's amazing, because I remember seeing you, like, even in training sessions, like nutting the bar and having your head bleed and then going and squatting. So yeah. I kind of remember when that changed and you just became a lot calmer. But what made you change? Like, was it just a maturity thing? At one point you were just like, do you know what, fuck that, I don't need to do that anymore, I'm wasting my own energy? Or what was it?
Yeah, it's just maturity. So, you know, I think I stand by is everything needs to be as repeatable as possible. Mm-hmm. So we need to be constantly, everything needs to be repeatable, and everything we do is either needs to be reinforcing good habits. Now, if realistically speaking, you can't approach every single working set of an entire training cycle, you know, going absolutely berserk and off your head and smelling ammonia and, you know, headbutting the bar and doing whatever other, you know, ridiculous hype up methods that, you know, both myself and, you know, many partners have used in the past. And I just realized it wasn't repeatable, you know, it isn't repeatable. But what is repeatable is, you know, and as well, getting really hyped up creates a lot of mental fatigue, and obviously all fatigue is accumulative. So if I'm doing a lot of volume throughout a training cycle, and on top of that, I'm also adding on a lot of mental fatigue and you know, accumulating fatigue from getting very, very hyped, it's going to inhibit the amount of volume that I'm able to do over the training cycle, and then, you know, obviously going to be able to inhibit my long-term progression cycle to cycle, and, you know, year to year. Furthermore, on competition day, you know, they are, you know, you've got 9 lifts, and it can be quite grueling at times, and they can be quite long. And if you're, you know, if you've actually, you know, shot your load and, you know, used so much mental energy for getting so hyped up in your squats, you know, where are you going to go on your bench and your deadlift? You're going to be totally exhausted. Mm-hmm. So it was about improving repeatability, and also trying to manage fatigue both on competition day and also through training.
See, it's really interesting, and one of the things I'm fascinated by is like accumulative fatigue. I love that, because like with me going through therapy recently, with just a whole bunch of other shit going on in life, you realize just how much the other things in life impact your training. So I guess by removing everything else that you can, you have complete control then. And obviously, as trying to become a world champion and fighting for that, you have to have complete control over everything. There can't be variables that you have no control over, because then you don't know what's going to happen on competition day. So with the competition in mind, you've got, now I'm not sure on the order here, but I think the Commonwealth is next, isn't it? And then you've got the British and the Scottish Championships. So what is the plan going into those? I'm assuming you kind of go into every competition with the same mentality. Like, obviously you want to win, of course you do, you want to be that champion. But now that you've kind of, you're at the top of the level you're at, obviously as a junior right now is what I'm trying to say, you're at the top, you can't get any higher there. So what is the plan going into those next 3 competitions?
Yeah, so 9 weeks on Sunday I've got the Commonwealth Championships, so the Sunday the 17th of September, and the goal is to, you know, the goal is to win. The goal is the gold medal. Now I'm not really sure who I'm going to be competing against. The nominations aren't out yet, so I'm not sure who I'm going to be competing against. You know, if I go and once I secure a second lift on each lift, that would win me the gold, then, you know, I could be a bit more aggressive in third attempts. If, you know, someone's there who's going to be very close to me, then, you know, I would pick numbers that I feel would be too high for anyone to match. But ultimately, yeah, the goal is to win, and the goal is to go 9 for 9. I obviously would like to hit personal best at the Commonwealth Championships, and on the day, if the personal bests are there, then, you know, I would take them. If they're not, then I would take a number that I feel I'm capable of on the day. But yeah, you know, the goal ultimately is to just win all 3. The Scottish is the week after the Commonwealth as well, exactly a week after. So again, and then after the Scottish, I've got 9 weeks between the Scottish and the British. So yeah, the goal is just to win all 3, and just put up the best performance that I am capable of on the day. at each competition that I'm capable of, and that hopefully will be enough to obviously, you know, play, have me place gold medal in all three competitions and finish the year out strong.
That would be pretty incredible to have all four championships. You just wear all the medals at the same time, right, walking down the road?
Yes, so that would be, you know, if I win all three of them, that'd be Scottish, British, Commonwealth, European and World titles all this year.
Oh my God, that's insane. It's so amazing just to see it, but just to know, like I said, and I keep saying it, like, we've seen you on YouTube putting in all the hours, watching the videos and seeing you talk about your training and everything. So seeing this, like, come to fruition, it doesn't surprise me by any means. But at the same time, like, I am so stoked that it's happening for you. So you mentioned that two of your competitions are a week apart. Now, for the majority of people, maybe not for you aliens, but for the majority of people, I think competitions take a hell of a lot out of them because they're very, very taxing, especially like younger lifters, like less experienced lifters, sorry. How would you kind of prepare for the Scottish after the Commonwealth? Because let's say, for argument's sake, you were saying that you could be a bit more aggressive if you don't think someone's going to be near your numbers. So let's say you are more aggressive and you set some great PBs, then what is it looking like going towards the Scottish like? Because obviously you're going to peak for Commonwealth. How do you then prepare for the Scottish straight after that? Do you have to plan your peak very strategically to be able to do both at the same time, or do you just kind of go with the flow? Like, how do you approach that?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. You know, so again, obviously, you know, my coach is Ben Rice. So with my coach being Ben Rice, obviously, you know, that's for him to work out the all the logistics for that. But realistically speaking, at the Commonwealth, you know, obviously we'll peak for the Commonwealth. When we come home, I've not booked my flights yet, but we would be flying home on the Sunday, on the Monday, sorry, so we'd be flying home on the Monday, and with us flying home on the Monday, that would then allow for me to get back into training on probably the Wednesday, with having Tuesday off, so I'd probably just train the Wednesday and train on the Friday, and then compete on the Sunday again at the Scottish Championships. So the idea would be just to kind of try and do our best to hold quote unquote hold on to the peak for another week, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But again, the Scottish is of less importance than the Commonwealths, and again at the Scottish, you know, we know that we'd be able to win with numbers that are far from our personal best. So even if we're not feeling it on the day, it's not that big of an issue because we can still complete the goal. And obviously the goal is to win.
Yeah, so you can kind of be a bit more conservative, I guess, if you need to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So going, let's say, like, 5, 6, 7 years time, obviously, because we see people getting stronger and stronger every single year. Like, there's some people out there that are really young that are just moving ridiculous kind of weights. Like, what's the goal for, let's say, 5, 10 years time? Like, what are you looking to be doing in the future
regarding powerlifting itself?
Yeah, let's say regarding you as an athlete first, and then let's say you as a coach.
Okay, cool. So I would say, regarding powerlifting, the goal in 5 to 10 years is to just be as strong as possible. So that is the goal. The goal is just to be as strong as I can possibly be, mm-hmm. In 5 to 10 years. You know, obviously, I'm not going to be able to predict those numbers that I would be able to do in 5 to 10 years. You know, I just obviously simply, you know, can't predict that. But I would like to be as strong as possible, and I would also like to win the IPF World Championship in the open category. Mm-hmm. So that is the goals with powerlifting, you know, just to have a lot of fun doing it, experience a lot, you know, to experience, you know, tons of different countries and cultures from going to the different competitions, you know, meet new friends, you know, make lifelong memories with it, you know, just try and have a lot of fun with it, you know, just really, really try and enjoy what I'm doing and enjoy the training and the competing and the PBs and all of that, because I think it's so many people get so wrapped up in, you know, and I've done this myself, you know, more times than I like to admit, but you're so wrapped up in chasing numbers and chasing titles and whatnot, you forget to have fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
So have a lot of fun and, you know, ultimately win an IPF Open World title. You know, that would be the ultimate goal. And coaching wise, yeah, again, you know, just continue to just to continue to work with, a variety of different athletes and continue to form close relationships with all those athletes and help, many different athletes from many different disciplines over, many different years, and, give people opportunities with getting better at whatever sport they do that they maybe wouldn't have themselves due to maybe their lack of knowledge with strength training. That is kind of the goals that I would say that I personally have right now, and again, and really focus on enjoying coaching people, because it's, it's something that I do love to do. It's a lot of fun, and it's a passion of mine. And just become more knowledgeable and learn as much as possible, because nobody knows it all, and there's always more to know.
Of course, yeah. So going towards the coaching thing a little bit, I had a couple of questions off people that they asked me, but I feel like you're probably, well, you're in a much better position to answer them. And I also feel like you'd be able to give a really good answer. So the first question is, a gentleman approached me saying that he really wanted to take up powerlifting, but was a little bit intimidated by doing so, intimidated by learning the new movements, let's say, because obviously they can be really, you see people in the gym doing the movements, but the movement itself in powerlifting as a sport, they're obviously very technical. So what advice would you give to somebody that is looking to start powerlifting but is maybe too scared to, doesn't know what they're doing? Like, obviously you can say jump in, but let's get a little bit more in depth here. Like, what kind of thing would you say to someone?
I would encourage them to explore why they're nervous. Is it because they're nervous of doing the lifts, or is it because they're nervous because they don't want to be in a position of being of being on the spot, and maybe they don't know what to do with people watching them, or being vulnerable, or being vulnerable in a gym setting and being vulnerable because they're maybe doing something that they're not too sure what to do. If that's the case, I would say a relatively good point to begin with, an easy point to begin with, is try and find yourself a good, knowledgeable coach or personal trainer that is understands the movements and how to perform the movements properly, and seeking out maybe a few sessions with that person to help you with the movements. I think that, working with someone that's confident in their ability and overall a confident person could immediately help with not feeling so vulnerable because you've got someone there teaching you, helping you what to do. And then secondly, I would encourage them to, even though you're maybe feeling a bit worried about and a bit nervous, more often than not, people build things up in their head to be way worse than they're ever going to be,
Yeah.
And I mean, I do that, and I think so many people do that. I think it's way, 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 way more common than people ever would give it credit for. But so often we envision certain things happening and how bad things are going to be, and then eventually, maybe after a long, long time, we do that, and we're like, that actually wasn't even bad in the slightest. I don't know why we just didn't do that earlier, And I would encourage people to try and recognize that with starting a new endeavor. So what I would say to them is, I would say, find yourself a gym where there is an experienced and knowledgeable and confident coach, strength coach, personal trainer that is going to be able to teach you how to do the movements properly. I think even if you don't lack any confidence, I still think that's a good place to begin, because it's always good to have someone to teach you how to do movements properly anyway.
Absolutely.
And secondly, I would encourage you to find a gym with a gym that maybe isn't a big commercial gym, maybe a smaller gym, that maybe owned by a single individual, unlike like a big Virgin, which is just a massive chain gym.
Yeah.
But it's maybe a strength gym that's owned by a single individual, and more often than not, those gyms have very, very family a family feel to it, a very family environment to it, and you know, to go there for some, you know, some mutual support, and also, you know, just encourage people to, you know, just to step out of their comfort zone a wee bit. You know, I know it's not nice, and I know it can be difficult, and I know it's way easier said than done, but ultimately, the only way to truly get better at anything in life is to step out with your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, you know, yeah.
And there's a good quote by Ralph Waldo Emerson, which is, "May you always do what you're afraid to do," and I love it. And I think that that's something that, you know, we all should try and live by to some extent.
Absolutely, yeah, that's a great quote, and it's, I'm going to assume that's, let's go back a little bit. So environment, I think, plays a crucial role, because you could be in a gym where, let's say, you're the strongest person there. So you might become complacent or whatever, but if you want to continue to get stronger, you've got to continue to push yourself. But also having the right people around you that are willing to support you, even if it is a little bit odd, like, I think, especially in this country, maybe powerlifting can still be a little bit taboo in most gyms. Like, if you go to a lot of gyms around the areas, like you said, you go to commercial gyms and stuff, it can still be a little bit taboo. But you go to a smaller gym, so you go to OBS, obviously that's a great environment for you to be training in, because it's a fantastic gym. You've got the right people surrounding you. You have that support. So no matter where you go in your life, you've got the support. Like, you've got the support from your family. Obviously, you know what you're capable of. But then as soon as you go to the gym to put the work in, you've got that support there as well. And I think that is absolutely crucial. So is that the reason that you went to OBS over your garage gym? Because obviously we know that you used to work out in your garage, just you. Every now and then you'd have someone in there with you, but it was just loud music or whatever. And then it would just be you. So is that the reason you left, for the right environment?
So the initial reason why I left was because I wasn't really able to deadlift my garage much anymore, because of the consistent deadlifting, I was causing cracks in the in the floor, and cracks and some cracks at the walls. So I wasn't able to deadlift anymore. So what I originally did was I originally moved to OBS, and just, I still squatted and benched in my garage, but I just deadlifted in OBS. And, you know, as I was, you know, as the weeks and months went on, I got to know people better, and, you know, made some new friends and whatnot. I just always had much more enjoyable and much more productive sessions down in OBS. And then I eventually just thought, well, you know, if I'm always having more productive and more enjoyable sessions, then, you know, why wouldn't I just make this transition entirely? And I did, and, you know, I've never really looked back from it in the slightest.
I guess you've just gone from strength to strength now, haven't you, being surrounded by the right people?
Yes, absolutely. You know, again, the saying, what's that saying? It was by Les Brown. It'll come back to me. It'll come back.
Okay. So I'm curious about this, and I haven't actually asked anyone on a podcast yet. There's a lot of discussion about powerlifting in the Olympics. Do you think that is ever going to happen?
No.
Why?
Because there is a whole side to powerlifting that advocates drug use. Mm-hmm. You know, so obviously there's a whole non-testy side to powerlifting which advocates drug use, which, you know, isn't necessarily such a bad thing. However, what the problem is that because that's there, I don't feel that the Olympics could allow for that to get into the sport. Mm-hmm. Because it's, you know, the Olympics is a drug-free sport, and because the Olympics is a drug-free sport, to bring in a sport that has a whole side to it that advocates drug use, I can't really see that going, that being allowed in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I think there is a lot of drug use in powerlifting, obviously, like a hell of a lot. So I mean, you see some of the biggest guys, but I mean, we know that they're on.
The thing is that there's a lot of drug use in the Olympics, which is ironic.
Yeah.
You know, like the amount of drug test failures that weightlifting, Olympic weightlifting, has had is unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, it is absolutely unbelievable how many fails there has been. And yet, in one class, actually, I'm not sure what class it was, and I'm not sure what Olympics it was, but there was one class where, like, eighth place ended up being given the bronze medal.
Oh, wow.
Because of the amount of failed doping tests there was, you know. So drugs, you know, drugs are absolutely in the Olympics, and anyone that doesn't think they are is, you know, either naive or ignorant. I'm not saying everybody's on it. I wouldn't say that, but there are a lot. But the problem is that when you have a sport that's very open about their drug use, that's when I think the problem incurs. That, you know, how could we let a sport in that has a whole side to the sport that people are very, very open about their drug use? And, you know, to some extent, a lot of people advocate their drug use, you know, and seem very proud of it. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, see if someone, you know, because the thing is, they're not doing anything wrong. See if someone wants to take steroids and performance-enhancing drugs and they compete in a federation that allows for it. You know, if that's their prerogative, more power to them, you know.
Yeah.
I've got nothing against that person, you know. You know, here in the UK, you're not even really breaking the law. It's not illegal to actually take them. So, you know, if that's someone's prerogative, you know, awesome. You know, if that's what you want to do your life, you know, go for it. I'm not, you know, going to judge you or holding against you for that. But I don't think the Olympics would allow for a sport like that to come into the Olympics. I hope I'm wrong. You know, I think it'd be amazing for the powerlifting to be in the Olympics.
Yeah.
I think the sport itself is worthy of being an Olympic sport. I just feel because of the side to the sport that allows drug use, I think that's our major spanner in the works.
Yeah, and to be honest, I'd never really considered it like that. I think a lot of people just see a lot of politics in powerlifting. They don't think it's going to make it to the Olympics, but you're right. I mean, there is a lot of drug use in our sport. There's a lot of people that are open about it. I'm curious, what's your opinion on it? Like, would you ever take steroids, honestly?
I'm not sure. I think anybody who is a competitive athlete in powerlifting or bodybuilding that has never looked at steroids and thought, you know, I that would be quite cool to take them, to really take me to that next level, would be lying.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely something I've thought about. However, if I ever was to take them, I wouldn't cheat. I would just move into a federation that allows for it. You know, I would never take them and compete in the federation that in a drug tested federation. I just think it's, you know, wrong and immoral and pretty shitty. Yeah. However, you know, I wouldn't cheat. But, you know, it's honestly right now, I want to win an IPF Open World title. I'm well aware that is probably 5 to 6 years down the line, maybe even longer, because, you know, the average age of an IPF gold medalist is like 30. In the open category, so, you know, I've got a long road ahead of me before that. So, you know, see, until I win an IPF open title, it's not something that I'm going to do. And that's so far down the line that it's honestly something I can't answer, because, you know, I don't know who I'm going to be or what I'm going to be like or what situation I'm going to be in, you know, 7, 8, 9, even 10 years' time.
Yeah, I understand that, but I appreciate the honesty of it. There's a lot of people that might have been like, well, no, I wouldn't, and then you might find out that later on they did or whatever. So I appreciate the honesty. So, Mark, powerlifting's grown a lot in the last couple of years, like a hell of a lot. It's become increasingly popular. What do you think is the key for kind of helping powerlifting develop further? Obviously, we've got a lot of people into it now, but how do we continue this trend and continue to grow the sport?
That's a great question. I think the raw movements help a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think raw lifting is one of the reasons for the surge and the growth of the sport. And the reason because of that is because it's just much more relatable to the average person. I think trying to get away from this backyard, underdog, underground mentality for the sport is also the way, you know, because, you know, so many people are so proud that powerlifting is, you know, it's an underground sport, it's a backyard sport, you know, it's not for everybody. Only a very select few special people can ever do powerlifting. That mindset is what discourages the average person away. And of course, you know, to get to the best in any sport, you've got to be a special person. You've got to be a special type of person to be the best, because you know you're the best. However, in football, or anyone that's watching from America soccer, in football, you know, there are a select few in the world that are the absolute best, and they're very special. But what makes football what it is the 50, 60, 70,000 normal football fans that go and watch every week that are probably just very, at one point in their life, were just very normal, regular footballers. And that's what that's going to have the power, and we're going to have to make it appeal to the norm, to the average normal person, everyday person that's going to enjoy it. I think the Raw movement is doing that. I think, and I think, you know, the main thing is the Raw movement that's going to really, really help continue to increase the sport, and just trying to get it out there a bit more. You know, maybe putting on competitions where people could work with prize money, you know, so competitions that offer prize money is a good way to increase the level of the gene pool that select to do powerlifting, because you know at the end of the day, if there's money incentives, more people are going to be attracted towards that.
Yeah, for sure, 100%. I think you're right there, because they did that competition. I can't remember what it was called. Was it the CT Open or something like that? There was like a $40,000 cash prize. Like, obviously, there's people competing there that. You've got people that are natural, you've got people that are on things, so it's like a big mixing pot there. But I think you're right in offering an incentive is going to be the way forward for the sport. Of course it is, and I think that's the same for anything really, isn't it? Like, people always want something back, but
Well, at the end of the day, if you made football, like, you know, you can do football, but you're not going to make a wage from football. I can guarantee you, in 10 years, the amount of people doing football will have dropped by, you know, the millions.
Oh, 100%, 100%, and I think you find a lot of powerlifters, like, they're doing it just because that's what they love to do. It's not that they're trying to make a career out of it; they just love it. So.
Because, you know, really, there's ways to make money through powerlifting. You know, there's ways to make money through powerlifting. You know, obviously, the better the powerlifter you are, the more exposure you may have. And with you having more exposure, you know, you would be able to sell your coaching service and stuff. So you can make money. You know, my whole business is a byproduct of powerlifting, you know. However, powerlifting itself doesn't give me an income. The only way to make money is to branch off and use any form of popularity you could gain from powerlifting to maybe create some monetary avenues. But ultimately, if you made money prizes and cash prizes and incentives like that, I think that's a pretty standard but very effective way to make a lot of money.
100%. I think you're right, and I think it's going to be crucial, isn't it, for the growth of powerlifting. So, Mark, I have one last question for you, and then we'll let you go. Same question I ask every single person at the end of the podcast. Now, let's say it's going to be a really odd thing to say, but let's say there's an alien coming from outer space. You've got to explain what strength means to someone. Like, what would you say is the Mark McQueen definition of strength? Not like dictionary definition, but if you had to explain it to someone who didn't know what it meant, what is strength?
What is strength? That's a great question. I would say, I wasn't prepared for that question, so totally off the top of my head, I would not say that strength is anything to do with the amount of weight that you can move. I would say strength is the courage and the ability to live life on someone's own terms, and be confident and willing and able to see that through, regardless of what peers would think of them.
I like it. Beautiful. Fantastic answer. So thank you for that. So, Mark, thank you so much for joining us today. We really, really do appreciate it. We've learned some stuff about you. We've learned about powerlifting, and I think people are really going to enjoy it. And here's to your growth. Here's to the growth of the sport. I think hopefully next time we see you, maybe for a video or even for another podcast, you'll be like a champion in all avenues. I have no doubt.
Yeah,
So,
no, thanks so much for having me. I've really enjoyed it. It's
I've
really
thoroughly
fun.
enjoyed it. I wish you the best of luck for the Commonwealth, for the Scottish, for the British, and for everything else that's come in, and all your future endeavours. Mark, best of luck with everything. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.